Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 4 of the Daily Zeitgeist, a.k.a. the White Bashing Cuckfest, according to one of our reviews.
Hey!
Ayo! It is November the 2nd, 2017. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hello, and I just want to tell all my people out there, I love you, no matter what your race, creed, or color.
And that's our guest. He is the host of one of my favorite podcasts that Miles and I had the pleasure of guesting on very recently. I think it's up as of yesterday. He is Andrew T, and the show is Yo, Is This Racist? What up, Andrew?
What's up?
There he is.
He's also one of our best guests that we've had so far on this show. He is a returning guest.
Yeah.
Nailed it the first time.
I mean, for you, what's it like being on season one and now being on season four?
Oh, my God. The arc of, like, how, the amount you guys have grown and changed, I think, is the real thing.
Yes.
The Miles character really, like, turned into something, I guess.
Thank you
so
much.
Very thin at the top, but, you know.
It was. Like
now
my hair.
Now it feels real.
Right. That inner conflict, we won't say specifically.
Yeah. Well, that'll be revealed in a season six cliffhanger. You guys will know.
Andrew, what's something you've searched in the not-too-distant past that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Listeners might remember last time I was on, I had turned off, my search history, like tracking on Google.
Yes, we got a lot of flack about that.
Did you really?
No.
That is literally how full of myself I am. Like, well, of course, that was the thing that really made a splash. And as the intro was starting, I realized I hadn't turned it back on.
Well, good. So you're still staying
staying
Google.
Off the grid.
Yeah.
The craziest thing, though, that I've been watching on YouTube that I even subscribe to, so this is just a thing that is part of my media diet now, there's this fucking weird Danish guy that's like a survivalist who lives in, like, the middle of nowhere in Russia.
Whoa.
And he just does these videos that are awesome.
Does he do like ancient survival skills?
No, they're like he walks around with an AK at all times.
Oh, shit.
And it's just like, but it's like, he's just like a camping guy, like, you know, like the other weird survivalist shit I was watching. But he's like, he's this dude. I think I have this new category of YouTube, which is, I'm realizing most categories of dudes that I'm interested in exactly one thing that they're knowledgeable about, and like thoroughly uninterested in everything else they would have to say. I was like, oh man, whatever this guy thinks about global politics, the world, black people, I'm positive I don't want to know.
I like that.
That's a dark insinuation. You're probably a fine person, Mr. Survival Russia.
What is his name, or how can people find him?
Just Survival Russia.
Survival Russia.
He's just this jolly Danish dude, like, in the middle, like, making humongous, like, the last video I watched of his, he was really stressed out because there was a big spruce tree that fell. He's like, how am I going to deal with this spruce?
Wow. Problems we
anyway,
will never experience.
That's what I got.
What's overrated?
Overrated preparation.
Yeah.
I made a bunch of attempts at coming up with a funny one, and I was like, fuck it. I'm going to wing it because I got nothing. I couldn't come up with anything funny. You know what? Having said that, I'm going to undercut myself right now. I am happy with my underrated.
What is your underrated
today? You know what? But this also cuts to the preparation thing, because we had discussed before we started recording not talking about this potentially, but I'm going to fuck up all y'all's plans right now.
Uh-oh.
And say my underrated thing is, it's not as bad as you think, being two blocks from a World Series game. Because I was really stressed out. I was like, my fucking neighborhood is going to be like a mess. It's going to be a nightmare. And it has been not that bad.
You live right next to Dodger Stadium.
Pretty close. Yeah. Like, I was joking about this, and this is, I'm sure there's some fucked up antecedent to this train of thought, but I was like, if there's like a riot of some kind, you know, I'm not in prime car burning territory,
right?
But I'm in car burning territory.
Right. Yeah.
Well, at least your Instagram will be lit.
Yeah, exactly. Shit is about to get literally lit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's not been that bad. I think it's because tickets are so expensive that, like, people are like, yo, I'm here to see fucking baseball. Like, yeah. I need to see every second of this baseball.
Yeah, yeah, people are serious about this.
Yeah, I mean,
they're serious.
I think, like, the seats down in the, like, stadium club are, like, $12,000 a pop.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Can you imagine...
Not doing that good.
...spending over, presumably, I guess it's not for these people, but, like, multiple months' rent on a baseball game.
I don't even pay my rent. I'm, like, delinquent on that shit.
It's some shit where I was just like... Because the only thing I like about baseball... about going to a baseball game is not paying attention to the baseball game, and I wouldn't be able to
not pay attention.
Yeah,
not for that money.
Can't fucking do that.
Start the wave during like
yeah.
a really tense inning.
Honestly,
you're like hey,
what's everyone's problem, man? The wave. All I'm doing at a baseball game is trying to see if the people I'm there with will be grossed out if I have another hot dog right then.
No,
I'm
never.
Just like if no you have judgment. To like wait an inning.
Every time I go there, sometimes we have the pleasure of going into the luxury state or the Lexus Stadium
yeah.
Club where it, like all the food is free.
Yeah.
And I will load up on the dogs. Like
just
no
embarrass
shame.
Yourself.
I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. I'm there for the hot dogs.
I can gross you out. Next time we'll go to a baseball
a show,
game.
Yeah.
Next
you
season,
will be
next
shocked.
Season. Yeah. I promise you.
Yeah.
I like that.
Before we get into the stories, we like to talk about what is the daily zeitgeist. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas out there changing the world, whether we're paying attention or not. We talk about politics, the president, news, but we also talk about movies and supermarket tabloids. And it's a interesting time in the zeitgeist where I like to say we're waking up from the nightmare of history is how I think about it. And it seems like more... That is happening more and more recently. The stuff that was like deemed okay in the past, we're suddenly looking at with new eyes and saying, holy shit, Manhattan is about a pedophile. And, you know, winking about the quote casting couch isn't all right. That is rape. I think we're still in the process and other things. I was listening to The Gist, another daily podcast from Slate, and he was talking about how Dr. Seuss is somewhat racist, and it made me remember something we talked about back at Cracked, that Disney's entire empire is built around a central iconic character who is designed based on a minstrel cartoon, like from the white gloves and black skin to the big mouth and white eyes. Mickey Mouse is based on a minstrel cartoon.
And it also gets worse from there.
Right.
It gets worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. That's not what a mouse looks like. That's what racial cartoons at the time looked like. So that's why we do what we do. The Zeitgeist Matters. We're at a time of change and progress in some areas and regress in other areas. And we're trying to capture the whole big ball of it in 45 minutes each day. So I should get to the stories then. We're going to start out with John Kelly's interview on Fox News from a few nights back. In which he defended Robert E. Lee, a historical monster. And this is kind of part of an overall propaganda campaign to make Robert E. Lee seem like an okay person. So he's not alone in believing this, but let's hear that quote. This was supposed to be like a softball interview that made him seem good.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state, which in 150 years ago was more important than country. It was always loyalty to state first back in those days. Now it's different today. But the lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War. And men and women of good faith on both sides made their stand where their conscience had them make their stand.
Yeah.
Oof.
So, interesting. That's a take. That's
yeah,
certainly
that
a
is
take.
A, and then, yeah, ignoring all the literal compromises that happened before the outbreak of
right.
the Civil War, like the Compromise of 1850 or the Three-Fifths Compromise.
Right.
A lot of compromise. Like
it happened because of a failure to continue compromising, I guess, is his point.
I guess
maybe?
First is, what is the compromise that we should have done to keep the Civil War from happening?
Right.
Yeah.
It is a really strange way of putting that. I mean,
I have no idea. I mean, he's advocating for the expansion of slavery, right? Because like that was like one of the things even Abraham Lincoln talked about, because they're trying to expand like slavery to like U.S. territories and Cuba and protect their right for people to have slavery in those areas.
I mean, I think it's like, this is like on some, I mean, as we all know, noted negotiator Donald J. Trump. Mm-hmm. This is just some, like, it's like, oh, okay, well, what's the negotiating position, man? Like, what is your opening salvo? Or what's, like,
right.
the South's, like, what do you want, then? What is right. the compromise? It's like, so weirdly, like, cowardly to just be like, wink.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking say it.
Right. It's a failure to compromise. So calling it a failure is very strange. But the really outright offensive, like no possible way to positively interpret that is this idea that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. This is actually part of a 150-year-old propaganda campaign designed to basically erase slavery as the cause of the war and whitewash the Confederate cause. But I think I had learned this myself, that Lee was just an honorable guy caught up in a conflict because he couldn't take up arms against Virginia. And so he, like, even though he hated slavery, he wanted to, you know, he couldn't fight his own, like, neighbors and his own family. And so he decided to, like, regretfully join the Confederate side. And that's just not true at all. He was, like, a brutal slave owner who broke up slave families on his property and, like, was known to whip his slaves and then, you know, put briny water, like salt, on their wounds. He was just like a monster, like a historical monster that, in the aftermath of the Civil War, white supremacists have used him as a person to sort of lionize so that people could, you know, have something to rally around, and so that white supremacists sort of had a figurehead.
Well, even as a general, right? You know, he was terrible. Like, he believed black POWs didn't deserve humane treatment and would even use them as human shields. So there's, like, even as a military person, you think John Kelly would be like, hey, that's like a whack-ass even military strategy. But even then, all these people who try and paint the Civil War for anything other than it is, it's because they're hiding the fact that they actually think that black people aren't on equal footing as white people. They don't actually believe in racial equality. Right. That's sort of the underpinnings of all this.
Yeah.
And
well, and that the everything that has pushed for equality is a direct at the expense of white people, white Southern people.
Well, that was the fear even in the antebellum period, is like, if you free these black slaves, they will dominate white culture and they will oppress us.
Yeah.
And you can even see that now. Like, we talked about this with that on your show. When we were talking about that poll that came out. Yeah, yo, is this racist? check that episode out. It's wonderful. That there were, like, there is this growing sentiment amongst white people that they do feel that they are being victims of some form of racial oppression.
Yeah.
Right. When he says that, you know, we're putting today's standards on the past, it implies basically that only white slaveholding opinions mattered at that time, because it's not like the people who were slaves didn't know that slavery was evil. South Carolina was majority black back in 1860. Mississippi was majority black back in 1860. They knew in their own time that slavery was wrong.
Well, and also there was a name for these people at the time. Like, the fact that there were people called abolitionists mean that, by definition, there were people at the time that knew that this was wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, they have a name.
Yeah.
It's like John Brown didn't think, you know, like, if you asked John Brown what he thought about fucking Robert E. Lee, he'd be like, yeah, he's a racist scumbag.
Right.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, when he tries to say this argument that that Robert E. Lee is noble because he was fighting for his state or whatever. And like a lot of people do use this like states' rights argument, like all the way back there. But let's be real. They were loving federal power and oversight when it was protecting slavery. And even like with like the Fugitive Slave Act that like gave federal marshals the power to just take any black person that they thought was an escaped slave or even person who may not have been in bondage back to the South for slavery. They were loving that. So it's all very relative, right, to whatever, even at the time, there's sort of these contradictory arguments that are being made.
Right.
But I feel like there's this thing, like there's the obvious like contradiction that's based on just like the desire for political power and maintaining fucking racist hegemony. But there is also the contradiction internally for these people who are like, well, we're not racist.
Yeah.
Like, but why do they care? Like, it's a little bit the same as like Holocaust deniers, like neo-Nazi Holocaust deniers. It's like, why are you making the argument that there wasn't a Holocaust?
Right.
Since you're a neo-Nazi, like, I actually don't get what they're ashamed of. Or I get what they're ashamed of, but I don't get why they're ashamed of
it. I think because that's how flawed the logic is.
Even. Yeah.
Like, if you want to, if you're going that far to be a neo-Nazi, that you, there inherently, you must feel that there is some shame.
Yeah.
Because you want to deny that the Holocaust even happened.
Yeah.
You mean, but if they're such, like, brutal people to begin with, then why are they bothering with the justification of...
Like, they're neo-Nazis who think that, you know, we should exterminate, whatever, let's say Jews now.
Right.
So why would they be ashamed of a, in their mind, hypothetical previous, like,
Holocaust.
Attempt at this?
Yeah. Right.
It's just very, it's
because
very,
they
like,
have wives that they have to like win arguments with, I guess, is like they're thinking. I don't know. Like
the people that are attempting to essentially like whitewash the history of the Confederacy. Like, I actually don't understand why they lean so hard on states' rights as opposed to just saying, yeah, we like slavery.
Right. Like, we think white people are superior.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There was a study, I think, recently, too, that showed 20% of Trump supporters believed slavery shouldn't have never have ended.
Yeah.
Which isn't surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of knowing that your beliefs won't look good in certain company and even like knowing that, you have a family, you have kids who you have to like, you know, talk in front of and like, are you going to be willing to... You know, be like, yeah, we're the bad guys of history, son. So one fact from Ta-Nehisi Coates' response to this, which is an amazing Twitter thread. I'm not usually a huge fan of when I see the like one of 30 next to someone's tweet. But this was one of the great Twitter rants with like sourcing and stuff. And he pointed out that the Confederate Army actually went into northern states and kidnapped free black men and, you know, sent them back down to the South to be slaves.
Yeah, that was in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, Pennsylvania. Yeah. And it was like basically every part of the Confederate Army did that under the supervision of their superior officers. So it was like it was an institutional policy. Not just that like, hey, don't mess with our slavery. It was like, we want to bring slavery everywhere.
Right.
We think that like slavery should, and there's also like Coates points out that like you don't have to sit in a Harvard history seminar to understand, but you just have to actually read what the people who started the Civil War actually said. And, like, one of them wrote in like one of the declarations was like, our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery, the greatest material interest in the world. And then another one was like, I want Cuba, and I know that sooner or later we must have it. And talks about a couple Mexican states that he wants. And then he says, I want them all for the same reason, for the planting and spreading of slavery. It's like, well, that's pretty clear
pretty
cut,
clear.
Guys.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know.
Yeah. I think this all, these Kelly remarks all kind of just show you that this sort of mentality, like, what's sort of the genesis point of people who are, who want to glamorize or make the Confederate cause noble, essentially, they are all believers that I think that they're not actually interested in racial equality at all. Because if you're going to defend
what?
Yeah. I think, right. I mean, that's why you, and it's easy to see now, like, why these certain, images are synonymous with, white supremacists and things like that.
Like, imagine if any of those fucking Confederate statues had, I don't know, for instance, direct quotes from any of the people that they,
right, underneath.
Yeah.
Right.
Or, let's just pitch this out, like a big neon word bubble over the racist ass head of Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, that could be a good subversive art project for some people.
I like it. That's how we solve this. And also just make General Kelly, like, read a modicum of history.
Well, but it's also got to be a thing, right, where he's like, he's repeating white supremacist arguments the same way everyone in the Trump administration. And also, in many ways, the way every Republican kind of has acted in a lot of ways, a lot of the times, like, it's like, oh, racism is wrong. Like, there's a lot of sides.
Hey,
but
let's get these voter ID laws checked that really only affect one demographic. I mean, yeah, there's it's Dog Whistle City.
Yeah. Like, none of this is new. None of this scholarship is new. Like, it's like, you know, 200 years of the same tired ass racist arguments. So, like we all were like, oh, Kelly's the fucking adult. Kelly's the adult in the room. And it's like, I mean, is he?
Nope.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think we can officially call him the artist formerly known as the good one, because he is a bad guy. We have officially learned that.
And he can change his name rather than even that just to a Confederate flag symbol.
Yeah.
Like the artist.
All right. We got to go to a break. We will be right back after that. And we're back. We're going to talk about in this segment sort of the track record that this administration is putting together that's sort of not too impressive when it comes to responding to catastrophes. And we're going to start with the horrifying events yesterday in New York City. Some dipshit mowed down 8 people after renting a pickup truck from
Home Depot.
Then he was shot and arrested by the NYPD. So since we don't know the reason for the Vegas shooting, this is technically the largest terror attack on U.S. soil of the Trump presidency. And not surprisingly, Trump decided to politicize the murder of a bunch of Americans. Like, almost immediately, he tweeted out about how he blamed an immigration policy and said he's trying to step up extreme vetting, and blamed his friend.
Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, his buddy Chuck Schumer. He was like, this is a Chuck Schumer beauty.
And I believe that vetting program predates... Like, that's a George H.W.
Yeah, that was a
Bush.
Lie.
Yeah. Right. Another lie. Yeah, well, could expect.
Good job, man. Good job, Trump.
Facts are fucked up, man, if they don't help you.
Right. It's a weird double standard because in the immediate aftermath of the mass shooting in Las Vegas, Fox News and Sarah Sanders both said that, you know, they didn't think that this was any time to politicize the tragedy when people started asking about gun control. There seemed to be a double standard because yesterday when it was a brown person doing the attack, it was immediately a political issue.
I mean, I guess one thing I do have to point out is interesting because, like, the argument of not politicizing, it works for both sides because you'll see also, too, like Bill de Blasio, his first thing was like, it's too early, like, we should not be politicizing this. And it's kind of the same thing, not to say that one's right or wrong, but it just shows you the dynamic of just our political system, because if it's a white person shooting people, then it's a gun control debate. And if it's a brown person supposedly committing some kind of like extremist terrorism, it's an immigration thing. And I found myself kind of it was odd, like the remarks were almost exactly the same. Depending on which side of it you're on.
Yeah, there is sort of that, like, internal... I mean, this is the most base part of me, but every time there's an emergency or like, an attack of some kind, I mean, part of me is just like, please don't let, like, please let it be a white person.
Right.
And you know, because it's like a complex stew of many awful things. But, like, part of me is like, because if it's a brown person or a black person, that will cause further problems for minorities.
Right. But, that only feeds whatever racial narratives.
Yeah. But also, there's definitely a part of me that's like, I want to have my biases confirmed. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, and everyone does do that. There is a thing where it's like, it's not about not politicizing it when a brown person does something, but maybe there's a way to talk about it in terms of like, hey, this doesn't say anything about Islam.
Right.
You know, or anything more about Islam than it does about Christianity or any other religion. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Well, 'cause that's what it is. It's as soon as it happens, it's like they're using that as evidence to create this perception of Muslims being people who should not be in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, that was George W. Bush's first response after 9/11, or one of his first responses was to say that this has nothing to do with the Muslim faith. It was just a thing about, you know, bad actors.
Right.
But then he proceeded, like, that was a time when the rhetoric and the policy was hugely disconnected, because then we went into a war that was sold as a war on, you know, in some quarters as a war on Islam, you know, new crusade type of deal. I mean, and the no fly lists and things like that, which, you know, again, were improved under Obama and were some of them started under Bill Clinton. So it's not like necessarily an ideological thing, but like, you know, we continued to be very racist towards, I mean, we're being racist towards Arabs, you know, with a religion as a proxy.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is how we've done it.
Yeah.
Forever.
Story. And that's the media, too. I mean, it's like we've completely poisoned ourselves with, like, these storylines that people can hop into easier. And unfortunately, like, these are kinds of stories that, like, the media loves too, because it gets people in a frenzy.
Yeah. There's a part where it's like, obviously the media is complicit in creating an audience that wants these biases confirmed about the dangerousness of brown people and the valor of white people. But there's a part of me that's like, when does that, like, kind of journalistic idea become, you know, or, you know, do we have a populace that's so fucked up that, like, it actually becomes unethical to, like, give the people what they want or the news they want?
Right. Yeah. Like, the local news vastly overrepresents crime by brown people or non-white people. And that's probably because, you know, the local news feeds on fear, and white people will be more scared of non-white people. And so, it feeds, it's just capitalism working, essentially. Yeah. But I think we talked yesterday about how France has, like, media blackouts 44 hours before their polls close. I think other countries are less sort of purely capitalistic about their media and how media, like, works. And they understand.
Right, because ad dollars run everything.
I mean,
your show will be off the air if advertisers, you know, are like, hey, we don't like this.
But the feedback loop is like, we also create a populace that is more scared of, like, black and brown people because of the news.
Right.
So it's like, getting worse, I assume?
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump is the perfect creation of the news. He, like, only watches news and then...
Yeah, only watches Fox, right.
Right, Fox. But, I mean, I think he secretly watches the other ones. And
of course, he's got to know.
Gets mad about them. But, you know, he reacts to the news and, you know, acts as the news will, you know, want him to act or... will, like, most freak out.
Isn't like that, like, a sociological phenomenon? What's it called? Like, cruel and terrible world syndrome or whatever, where people who watch the news too much, like, it, like, completely just poisons your worldview. Because of the media or whatever.
So, I mean, this also expands not just to, you know, his response to terror, and we'll see how the response plays out in the coming days, but we have seen how he responds to disasters and, you know, how his words are translated to deeds with the response to Puerto Rico. And the UN actually earlier this week just called America's response to Puerto Rico out. They said, we, quote, can't fail to note the dissimilar urgency and priority given to the emergency response in Puerto Rico compared to U.S. states affected by hurricanes in recent months. That was a quote from Leilani Farha, and who is a special special reporter on housing
again,
on the UN.
Oh boy.
Well, it's spelled weird.
Oh.
but yeah, roughly 70% of Puerto Rico remains without power still, more than a month after Hurricane Maria struck. Roughly a third of the island is without fresh drinking water.
I mean, the UN is shaming the U.S. government's response to this because it's so bad. And there were a group of nurses from America who went down there to Puerto Rico to help out with the disaster aid. And while they were there across the island, they sort of they put a little report together to let FEMA know just how bad the situation was, because clearly there are a lot of people who have not even who haven't had much interaction with FEMA. And they were saying there are things that are like some of the problems that are still happening is there are people standing in line 4 hours still for food and water with federal workers giving them paperwork instead of supplies. You have residents in soaked homes with no roofs where there is black mold spreading and people are getting increased respiratory problems. There are rural towns that have never gotten food and water supplies and yet have no running water or electricity. There's an outbreak of leptospirosis, which is like a bacterial disease that has already claimed lives. And multiple communities do not have clean water. They're at risk for outbreak of like waterborne illness epidemics. So these people are actually dying. And the other thing is, too, is like it pads the numbers of what the actual death toll is in for this hurricane. Like the official one was something around like 51. But a lot of people are saying because of the neglect and the abject conditions that people are living in after the fact is contributing to a lot more death that we're not actually saying like, oh, well, that's part of the hurricane.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the hurricane response itself has led to arguably probably more destruction and death.
Yeah. Well, it's like this thing where like because it's harder to establish a direct line of causality, like, I mean, this is conducting violence on brown people. This is causing loss of life through neglect and incompetence, right, and, you know, or competence, I guess. Like, incompetence is a weird thing where it's like, you know, incompetence at what?
Because right.
I think they're very competent at what they want to be doing, which was not giving a shit.
Sometimes.
Well, I mean, if you define what they want to be doing in the right way, I guess,
right,
is what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, even you're right. Even this like clumsy graft was pretty incompetently executed.
Right.
It's like a bummer, man. Like we laugh and shit because it's like, oh man, they're so dumb or whatever. And meanwhile, like people are straight up like suffering and terrible American people, man. And just because they don't live on the mainland and we've othered them because they live on an island and they also speak Spanish, that we're doing this shit. And I mean, like, not we, the people in this room, but like,
well, I mean, I think partially there is a thing where it's like we all need to take a little responsibility for
that's,
you know,
true,
what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, people, one thing. Yeah.
Sorry, it's just it's easy to be like, well, they're doing this, they're doing this,
yeah,
they're doing this, and I find myself in this trap too. But it's like, you know, like it or not, fucking Trump is our president, and we are the part of the reason why this is an outrage is because this is in our name, with our resources, with our, you know, this is us,
right? Yeah.
On NBC.
All right, we're gonna go to a quick break with that, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So for this incredibly dark episode, our fun story that we're gonna go out on is, appropriately enough, Hitler, which which, so in a weird detail of all of the JFK files that were released, one of the memos was concerning an informant who was a former SS officer that was alleging that Hitler was alive and living in Colombia. And so according to this guy's version of events, Hitler like wasn't even that secretive about it. He was living in a community with a bunch of other escaped Nazis who openly referred to him as Der Führer and greeted him with the Nazi salute. And he was going by the name Adolf Schrittelmeier, which suggests Hitler didn't want to change his first name like a stand-up comedian starring in a network sitcom. And the memo actually includes a photo of the source posing next to Hitler, and Hitler like looks almost identical. So again, it's he has the same mustache, which
you think, man, he's trying to be incognito.
But maybe that's his look. Yeah, it'd be like if Slash killed someone and then went on the run and, despite being a fugitive, still wore the top hat and carried a guitar and had
no
the same
sleeves.
Hair.
Yeah.
But so J.M. McNabb, one of our writers, kind of went down a research hole into like how possible this is. And it's really weird. Like, so the way that we identified Hitler after he killed himself, apparently his body was
allegedly
apparently his body was badly burnt. And so they took his jaws from his body. And they were given to a woman by the Soviets. And because they could count on, they were like, a woman won't get drunk and lose it.
Wait, that's why they gave it to her?
Yeah, that was the reasoning they used. Apparently, they needed to justify giving Hitler's jaws to a woman.
Yeah.
But
you're like, hey, have the lady hold that.
Right.
You know, we'll get too fucked up and lose it.
But so the way that they were identified was they found someone who said they were the assistant to Hitler's personal dentist, and the assistant to Hitler's dentist was like, yep, that's what Hitler's bridge work looked like. That's what Hitler's jaw looked like.
Because he had like a lot of, like, he didn't have a regular grill. Like, there was a lot of bridge work done, right? That's the reason why they say, like, that's how this person could identify it. But also at the same time, like, it's not like a unique situation if you have a lot of bridge work.
Right. The assistant to his dentist.
Yeah, not even the dentist.
Like, also probably a Nazi. Like, who's...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be the Nazi dental hygienist said.
Right.
If you really were, let's for a second believe this theory that it is, like, that's exactly what you do. They'd be like, look, fam.
Just be cool.
Yeah. Right.
All you have to do is say this is Hitler and be cool.
And they're just going off of this guy's word. Like, they have, I don't think, really much else aside from this. Like, yeah, I was the assistant to the personal dentist. Like, I have no actual dental training. I was just the assistant. But, yeah, that's Hitler's.
You learned on the job.
That's Hitler's mouth.
You know Hitler's jaw when you see it. Apparently, this is a conspiracy theory that the Soviets... We've talked in the past how a lot of the conspiracy theories that people believe to this day are things that were spread or reinforced by the KGB, like a bunch of JFK conspiracy theories, the government creating AIDS, and
any kind of discontent without regard to ideology. It's just like, make them confused and make their populace dumb.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the purpose of this was, but apparently nuclear winters, the idea that the aftermath of a nuclear war would be a weird winter-like thing, it was also invented by the KGB.
That's not true.
I still believed that.
I'm still going to believe
that. Recently.
I need
Wait, what is the current thinking?
I don't know.
We'll have to have a nuclear war to find out.
All right. I'm there, dogs.
Front row, baby.
But anyways, so the CIA's conclusion was this was a quote fantasy. But it's just interesting that our entire knowledge that Hitler is dead, I guess he would be dead by now of old age, but our whole entire basis for the belief that he died in that bunker was just one dental hygienist's assistant.
That was Ava Brown in there, right?
Well, yeah, obviously.
Okay.
Probably.
I mean, we all know her.
Yeah. We all know her jaw.
We all know her jaws. That is like the grimmest work fucking possible.
I know.
Separating a burnt corpse's jawbone.
Right. Yeah. Hey, could you grab that jaw?
Yeah.
I know people that don't like Karen over there. She'll handle it.
Yeah, she won't get drunk. I know people that don't like bones in their chicken.
Jesus Christ. It's just too grim a reminder.
So intense.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So what do you think, Jack? You think
is Hitler dead?
Is this you willing to jump on board this conspiracy theory?
No.
No?
No. I think it's just I believe that he, like, they say narcissists are extremely susceptible to suicide, especially when their whole, like, narcissistic kind of world collapses. It seems like him killing himself is the logical conclusion to his story.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think one way I like to kind of approach conspiracy theories too is like, just imagine pulling this off. Like if you were pulling this off, you would just be like, this guy's a dentist. If
right.
nothing else,
right.
you would say this guy's a dentist.
Right. Right. Exactly.
it's a fun one.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of Hitler straight up sneaking out of Berlin with his mustache still intact.
Right.
And be like, hey, we got to get out of here. But,
right.
I mean, look, on the other hand, if that is really Hitler, what a bold move.
Right.
I can't imagine having that kind of confidence of like, well, the mustache stays.
Yeah.
Like, whatever the fuck else
it's
happens.
It's my thing, you guys. Yeah. All right. this was fun. Andrew T., where can people follow you?
Andrew T., that's the last name is spelled T-I. Yo, is this racist? Listen to my very special guests. These motherfuckers.
Yeah.
They were really great. They were really great, their episode. And it's nice to have a little podcast synergy.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of fun.
This mm-hmm. is like, this is just heartwarming.
It's just starting to percolate, baby. It's just starting to percolate.
Miles, where can people find you percolating?
You can find me percolating on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow The Daily Zeitgeist at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. That's also, we have a Facebook page, The Daily Zeitgeist. We have a website that is just dailyzeitgeist.com, and our Twitter is dailyzeitgeist. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Thanks for listening, guys.